This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not reflect those of other podcasts or affiliates of this show or Gunna Geek. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeek.com. And get ready because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1...
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, the podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah. And my co-host, Haley Malley.
That line you're worrying about crossing. Look behind you.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 95 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we extrapolate the evolution of our studied program to its farthest possible outcome and coming to the irrefutable realization that we are the only podcasters capable of such accomplishments. We have no choice but to destroy all other podcasts around the world. It's going to be very lonely in the offices of the Gunna Geek Network. I am Jay, and with me this week is Keir. How's it going, Keir?
Very good, sir. Yourself?
Absolutely fantastic. And Haley, how are you doing tonight, ma'am?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, well, so this week, in light of some recent developments, we've decided that we're going to take a look at the creative force behind our beloved little deadly pepper bots. And we're not talking about Terry Nation here. We're going to be looking specifically at the character of Davros. As he grew from a prodigious young scientist on Skaro, with a mild Oedipal complex, all the way up to a crippled megalomaniac, to what we now know as sort of the universe's most sought-after psycho-popsicle, the Dalek creator is not one that you would necessarily call a stable individual. Now, he has come back time and time again from being defeated, from exile, and from near death, like some sort of malevolent whack-a-mole, almost as often as our good doctor has. And lately, as we've been hearing his voice in the voiceovers in the newest trailers coming out from BBC One, it looks like there's going to be another battle to come, waged between our doctor and the one-time Dalek Emperor. So we figured we'd get to know them a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, we took a look at it, and the only instance that any of the new Whovians will have run into him with is the End of Time or the Stolen Earth and Journey's End. And it was a good representation, but there's a lot more to this character, and we really wanted to get everyone caught up and really delve into the story behind him.
Right. He's not necessarily on par with recurring villains as you might consider the Master or something of that caliber, but definitely up there because of the fact that, as the inventor or developer, as you would say, of the Daleks as we know them, or what's left of the mutated race of the Kahl that were left over from the civil war on their planet. As we've seen through classic episodes and a lot of the extended material, he's actually got a relatively interesting and complex backstory. And even though some of the episodes that he appeared in don't necessarily qualify as what you would consider some of the top 200s or anything like that, in fact, a couple of them really get sort of beat up among the critics, there are elements about the character that are definitely worth noting.
Right. Yeah, and that the first time that we actually see him is Genesis of the Daleks. So this is, it's the origin story for the Daleks, and this is the first chance they really have, okay, who's the guy behind the Daleks? Who came up with the Daleks? Where did they come from? Because clearly they're not born in these little shells. Somebody had to come up with the idea. And so Terry Nation was really able to flesh out the origin story, so to speak, and show that, that it was all, a process conceived by this one complete nut job in a crazy wheelchair. And so it was really interesting being able to start to dig into that and then really tear apart the mindset of the Daleks by reverse engineering it and seeing Davros.
And the Kulleds were totally not modeled after Nazis. Not at all.
No, of course not.
No, of course not, no. And if you go and read the comics, the symbol that they were using as they were, training their young scientists.
It's absolutely not a curved swastika.
Nah, couldn't possibly be. As they salute to the skies. Nah.
Because I was thinking the whole time I was watching the first story, yeah, these guys couldn't look any more like Nazis unless they were wearing a swastika. So, good. They took care of that.
Guys, you left. There's one box here not checked off. Would you mind just going back? Call the prop department. So, but essentially, you know, we've got something here where it's actually within a really strong story. And we've talked about this story before about Genesis as we were going through and doing the episode on the Daleks themselves, because of the fact that we're playing with the fact that the Fourth Doctor has come back and is actually has full working knowledge of what the Daleks are going to become, and actually gets put through lie detector tests and such, and they sort of probe him to get the information about what these developments or what this research is going to be capable of. And he's reluctant to give the information. He actually tries to delete the files so that they're not going to be able to use the information later. The paradox kind of restores itself. But you see how diligent Davros and those working directly with him, including his Nygaard, his little toady, will go to see these ends carried out. We had a friend of ours, Badger, had actually pointed out very specifically, we throw around the word genocidal very quickly when we try to describe these dictator sort of types, but that's not necessarily true, because it didn't really fall within that category as far as what his aspirations were. It was more, because this wasn't a matter of like genetic purification or anything of that sort. It was really just a matter of civil war and conquest. It grew into that later, as he kept coming back with another scheme and another scheme and another scheme. But you see from these early roots that it kind of felt, as Haley said, very much like some of the early Nazi Party research when they started getting into their ideas about how they were going to be able to take over the sciences, take over socio-political structures and such. Heavy material to throw into a little sci-fi show.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this is the point where the show had been on for a long time. It had reached the point where they could really start digging into this stuff. So it makes sense in the life cycle of a sci-fi show. But yeah, I mean, this was a lot deeper than I was used to when I first came across it. I was like, wow, this is a lot more to the story than I really expected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but also got with Baker as your lead there. You've got somebody who plays very well against the most twisted of villains, because his personality, he'll eat these characters for lunch. So you can raise the bar on the kind of foes that he faces, and they don't have to be just paper thin.
Right.
So we might want to back up a little bit, though, Jay, I think, just because, obviously, as you were saying, New Whovians only have two episodes of exposure to really understand, who this guy was and why Tenth and Sarah Jane reacted the way they did when they saw him and such. But there's actually...
Yeah, I mean, the first time that we actually see him, he's already in the wheelchair with the little jewel in his head and, all that crazy stuff. So, but, I mean, there's a lot more from this character. I mean, he started out as a typical Khaled, right?
Yeah, he was, his mother was a sort of a nobility or sort of upper class. Don't know too much about his actual father, but, she remarried, to a military figure who wanted to raise her son to be, in that image. He was a scientific prodigy and wanted to pursue the sciences, but ended up getting roped into having to do that scientific development for the military. It was just inescapable, because this was right when, right in the midst of the thousand-year war between the Khaled and Thal, or Tal, however you want to pronounce it. His mother dies when he's in his teens, early 20s, not really sure, and he actually ends up using her ashes in some of his early genetic research. So he's already starting to bend. He was so enamored with her, and she was the only source, the only safe haven in his life, because everything else around him was so harsh and cruel that, there's that mild Oedipal complex, that he didn't even want to be without her after death. And found ways to be able to utilize her so that her legacy, I guess, in a sense, or her memory would live on. So there's, as within this war, there's a bombing on the in the dome where his lab is located, and he's obviously loses his. Here's the odd thing: he loses his legs, his eyes, and his taste buds. I don't quite follow that one, but okay.
Well, that's
some sort of gas bombing, maybe.
Yeah. Well, damn it. I shouldn't have chewed on that as I was trapped under that rock ledge.
All the good villains lose something, you know, important to them. And
it's a horrible smelting accident. Unfortunately. So he ends up using his own developments to create this life support wheelchair, for lack of a better term for him, that comes into play within the Genesis of the Daleks episode. But it's also, obviously, you know, you take a look at it and say, oh, well, there's the origins for the transport unit that he developed that became what later the encasement for the mutated Kalids that we know now as Daleks. There was an audio play entitled Davros, where you actually get a lot of flashbacks from him. It takes place somewhere between it's with the Sixth Doctor, but it takes place somewhere between the episodes, the televised episodes that we see with Sixth and with Seventh, where you get some sort of an understanding that the original idea for having the Daleks as this sort of this conquering race, or this force to go out and cleanse or clean, was actually another scientist's plans within the lab, his partner, so to speak. And he was kind of, you know, he had eyes for her and such, but he was also so power hungry and so determined to carry out whatever his end goal was, that he actually put aside his affections for her and stole her idea and presented it. So he actually wasn't technically the one to come up with the idea for the Daleks, but history is written by the victors. So,
yeah, that's not at all, you know, signs of evil genius or anything. It's, you know, with the little red flags that pop up when things happen. No, that's not on the checklist at all.
But one of the interesting things, so now we got that backstory, you take us into the Genesis of the Daleks, and we see as we get towards the end of that story that he creates something that even he can't contain. You know, his whole goal was that he wanted these things to be under his control, you know, whether it be under voice command or what have you, and they very quickly turn on him and everyone else around, and the genie is out of the bottle at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the basic thing, is you create the, all right, I'm just going to call it what it is, you create the Aryan race, and you're not actually part of it, and then expect to, oh, well, I'm going to rule over this race of perfect creatures that, you know, has no goal but to wipe out anyone that's not like them. It doesn't work out. Yeah.
Right.
And that's basically what happens here, is that the Daleks look and say, hey, you're not one of us. You're inferior. You've got to go. Mm-hmm.
So that sets the tone for what we now know the Daleks to be: absolutely soulless or pitiless creatures of destruction. And if it does not match the code, then it goes. And that includes you. So, you know, we come to the end of the story. His assistant is dead. He's been presumably killed. But, you know, as we come to find out later, he ends up in a very kind of unusual relationship with the Daleks that he has now unleashed on the universe, because he constantly wants to regain control of them. And mm-hmm. they're going to try to either utilize him as needed and then pick him off because he served his purpose, or, you know, they're going to do the same. They're going to end up putting him under their control for their own needs. So it's this weird little chess match that becomes a civil war within the Daleks as we get to later episodes. But it's really kind of interesting that they've got this sub story going on underneath all of the battles that they do with the Doctor.
Yeah, and this is honestly kind of something that keeps coming back. You know, we see in the future, you know, he works with the, was it Dalek Controller, or, I forget what they call it all the time.
Are you saying in the episodes or in the extended?
In the episodes.
In the episodes, the Dalek Supreme.
Yeah, that's what it is. The Dalek Supreme with extra cheese and, but. There's a battle between them of who's actually in control, and the Dalek Supreme recognizes, you know, this guy is smart. He does have his usefulness, so I can't just completely off him. And then Davros is trying to use the fact that he hasn't been killed yet to work his way back into being in charge. And so, I mean, it's just a recurring theme of him constantly trying to get these creatures that he created under his control. Yeah. And it never really works out.
Well, I think that's what moves it past the just slapping him with a label of saying, oh, it's the mad scientist motif again. Because it's a little more than that. Yeah. You know, he definitely does have this this bent on power, but is doing so through some kind of interesting means. You know, first he tries directly to wrestle control back. Then he tries to do it through subtlety and sort of a sleight of hand, trying to, as the Daleks put him to work. You know, we see that in Destiny of the Daleks. They find out that he is only mostly dead, and bring him back to help him out in this ongoing war that they've had with the Movellans. And that's where this great, again, sort of a recurring story of this idea of this virus that can be used against the Daleks. And the writers loved this. They used this a number of times going forward about some virus that was capable of wiping out the Dalek race. So they end up bringing Davros back to counter this, you know, put him in restraints, you know, sort of keep the leash on him. And all the time he's trying to figure out a way to get his control back, either by, you know, proving that his value and then trying to just call himself greater in their eyes or eye stalk, or doing it through some sort of subtlety. Doctor intervenes. By the end of that story, they put him in cryo freeze. And at that point, we come to find out that he's perfectly conscious for dozens of years while in a cryogenic state, just slowly going even more insane. So that helps.
Great plan.
So fast forward a little bit. Now we're up to Fifth Doctor now, Davison in Resurrection of the Daleks. So what's our story here?
Well, and this is the one that I was kind of talking about, where you've got the Dalek Supreme finds Davros, says, okay, we need to get him out of, you know, we need to thaw him out and bring him forward so he can help, you know, create a cure for this virus. You know, 'cause this is something it's a sword of Damocles. You know, it's out there. If anyone can find it and reconstruct it, then, you know, instant Dalek kill switch, you know, so they're trying to find the antidote, or the cure. And so it's a great play for power between the two of them. And then you've got the Doctor getting involved and, you know, throwing a wrench in everybody's plans and things just not going according to plan for anyone involved. I mean, this is just, this is a great example of how, you know, a plan is useless as soon as you set foot on the battlefield. It's everything goes out the window as soon as you actually come in contact with enemy combatants.
Well, there's a distinct opportunity here. You have back in Genesis with Fourth Doctor, there was a point right there where they have one of these great conversations over the console of Davros's little chair there, and Baker's fingers on the button. He's got the opportunity to kill Davros right there and then, as he gives the explanation of, you know, this is my life support system. Without it, I will be dead in 30 seconds or what have you. And Baker doesn't do it. Right here, Davison's got the opportunity to be able to take him out. And just doesn't have the I'm not gonna say the guts, but it's just not within his persona to do so. He's not just gonna take out anyone in cold blood like that, so to speak. But you know, the circumstances being what they are, Davros is able to make his escape. But now he's pissed off the Daleks directly. He's proven that not only can he not be used as a sort of a development force, you know, he can no longer be part of their R&D for weaponry or in these cases as these cures for the Dalek virus, but now he's sort of a war criminal as far as they're concerned. So by the time we come around to the next season, with Sixth Doctor and Revelation of the Daleks, now, this is actually, I wish this was a better episode than it was. I mean, there's some great material in this. This is an execution issue.
Yeah.
But it was one where the Doctor's almost ancillary in here, because this is a trial of Davros being put on trial by the Daleks and the Dalek Supreme. And the Doctor just gets in there to kind of muck it up a bit because he wants to get Davros out of there. As long as Davros is in the Dalek's possession, there's the possibility that they're going to be better for the experience in some way and be an even more formidable force. So the idea is just to get him out of there and isolate him. But I don't understand.
This is a great thing though. I mean, okay, so basically draw the parallel. You've got Davros as Dr. Frankenstein, and he creates, you know, his monster, which gets out of his control and goes forth and starts tearing stuff up. And he's like, well, I don't know how to deal with this now. Let me build another monster to go out and fight this one. It's like, this turns into, you know, Godzilla versus King Kong or something. You know, it's
or like every Hulk comic ever.
Yeah, exactly.
They so it's like white, you know, Hulk with gold balls on it. Cool.
Yeah. So Davros basically decides, well, I can't get control of my Daleks back. I'm going to create another version of the Daleks to take those Daleks out, and then they'll be under my control.
The Daleks or something.
Well, he couldn't even come up with the Daleks himself, so clearly he's not that inventive an individual. But, I mean, this is just insane on so many different levels. But, I mean, it serves to show where Davros has gone, like what has happened to him and like how far he's come.
But it does make for a great forward of the story and the character in particular. So if you're starting to wonder for yourself why it is that you know, as we start getting towards New Who, sorry, you know, post-2005 Who, why this is such a big name drop is because of the fact that this guy has, I call him this whack-a-mole because the Doctor has been trying to suppress him, cryo-freeze him, kill him, put him in suspended animation, you know, ship him off to an exile planet or do whatever it is he's been doing with him. The Daleks have been trying to pick him off, blowing up every ship he ends up showing up on for 10 years of programming of this show. And he just keeps emerging, you know, sometimes with more or less of a body. He's missing a hand. Now he's just a head in a jar, but he won't go down. And every time he keeps coming back, he's got an even more kooky plan for carrying out what his initial prime directive was, which was clean him out. So put it together.
Yeah, so I mean, at this point, you know, you can easily just label him a psychotic dictator, you know, someone scrambling for power, you know, in control of his own little North Korea-ish, you know, area. But he's, I mean, there is a he's lot so to the character. Yeah, that's not going to get me in trouble throwing that around. But I mean, that's basically what is going on here. And then, you know, we come forward to the remembrance of the Daleks, and, you know, Davros has set himself up as emperor. You know, he's got his secondary race of Daleks that he's in control of, which, you know, that's going to end well. Everybody knows. Yeah. And then decides to, you know, start going after Time Lord Tech and wants to pursue the Hand of Omega, or Omega, however you want
Omega,
to say it.
Omega, as Sylvester McCoy would pronounce it repeatedly. Omega, Omega, Omega.
Omega.
That's actually probably where the meme started. But, and this is one of those episodes that really got kind of beat up quite a bit by the community, because the script was not exactly rock solid, but the intent of where they were headed with it was actually pretty interesting. You know, the idea of amassing Time Lord technology to be able to do this, but it was more than obviously could be wielded, because it actually, you know, even the High Council and the powers under Rassilon himself weren't able to correctly rein in some of this weaponry. So he ends up splodifying his own ship and now sort of humbled, so to speak, or at least
as much as he can be.
Yeah, well, there's a bit of a divergence within the novels and things about what he does in that time period when, you know, obviously over the 10 years or so between when that episode aired and we started coming back into New Who. But by the time we get to the story that truly locks in canon, you know, we get that in Stolen Earth Journey's End. So what's he been up to? Well, he was kind of dead.
just a little
mostly
bit.
Mostly dead?
Well, this time he was about as mostly dead as he's ever been.
I had a slight case of death. It's okay, I got better.
But in a flurry of dialogue, it just gets blown out there over the course of about three lines that you find out that he was pretty much mostly dead, and Dalek Khan figures out a way to be able to enter the time lock and revive him and loses his sanity in the process. So you've got that great little bubbling, screaming Dalek mutant in the background, which reminds me a lot of King Bumi in the Avatar series, if anybody wants to go that route. I'm kind of feeling
I could see that.
Just and the reality.
He kind of made me think of like the Green Goblin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got that. So, but now understanding a little bit more about all the times that he's had to not only lock horns with the Doctor, but with the original, you know, call it the Mark One Daleks. When he shows up on the monitor, you know, or you just hear him on the monitor first, foreshadowing. You just hear him on the monitor, and his face pops up, and you watch Tennant just kind of plunge. But worse, you see Sarah Jane's face. And when she comes to the realization, you know, I thought he was dead. He's supposed to be dead. That's just brilliant. You know, that
I'm not
just drives
dead yet.
Home. I don't want to go on the spaceship. The crucible ship. So that's one of those great moments within the return of the series that gave this great tip back to classic Who that really made a lot of people just really happy that they were doing this.
And this worked to show how, you know, how completely nuts he was. The fact that, you know, he's building a reality bomb. Like, things have gone so poorly for him for so many millennia that at this point he's like, you know what? I'm just tired of reality altogether. I'm just going to destroy existence as we know it. And
if I can't rule everything, no one can have it.
Exactly. So, yeah, it does a great job of pointing out, like, okay, yes, he's completely nuts at this point. I mean, he's still a huge threat, but he's completely off his rocker.
Right. Willing to do anything. There are no boundaries left. So that kind of brings us up to where we're at now. You know, when we get these trailers about the upcoming series, and before you even get, you know, in any of the teasers that they had handed us, before you got any glimpses, I know we've had, you know, photo shoots on set and things, and we've seen some of the villains that we know we're going to be involved with. But as far as ones that have been represented in the released material, before you see anything, you hear that voice. So there's got to be a reason for this. So that's why we wanted to do this kind of look back today. Was like, all right, well, knowing everything that we've had to deal with from this nut job in the past, why is he now the one that they're putting up against 12th? So what are we thinking?
You know, it's one of those things, you know, that I can't remember who said it, but there's a quote that it's basically, I'm going to paraphrase, that when you decide that anything is permissible, or there's no limits to defeating an evil, you become indistinguishable from that evil yourself. And we keep seeing this whole recurring theme of, am I a good man with the Doctor? You know, he doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know how far he's willing to go, anything like that. So you put him up against Davros, who clearly has no boundaries, who has nothing that he won't do to win. And then you take the Doctor and say, okay, how far are you willing to go to take him out? So I think that's kind of where they're at right now, is they're wanting to show, you know, is he going to be a good man, or is he just going to be the lesser of two evils?
It's like in A Good Man Goes to War when he says, good men don't need rules. You don't want to find out why I have so many?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there was a long stretch where the Doctor was president and led the High Council and was the, by title, protector of the laws of time.
Sorry, that just still strikes me as funny.
It sounded better coming out of Colin Baker's mouth. He was kind of had that nice pomposity behind it. But I mean, you've got, I'm thinking about, you know, we've gone through the ringer with the Doctor as far as him dealing with the idea of being a near god. You know, or having those kinds of abilities or when tapped into, but they're, as Haley said, kept within restraint for good reason. Are we looking at two sides of the same coin in terms of right now the Doctor has a sense of purpose that has kept him in check up to this, up until this point. But right now, after everything he's experienced, if that purpose is starting to deteriorate, or if he's uncertain about that purpose, then, or uncertain of exactly who he is, are we running a risk of him descending? Or is he going to be just grappling with the idea that he could very well see himself descending into this? And you bring Davros in and put him back in the limelight. Davros is absolutely the type to be able to have that sort of a philosophical conversation with the Doctor and say, you know, you're two steps away from being exactly where I am. You know, you've had your hands on the two sides of that wire, you know, what have you. So, I can definitely see some of the justifications for bringing him up as a representative adversary this season.
Yeah. Yeah, because you think about it, and the Master is always like the evil side of his coin, where, you know, it's like, this could easily be the Doctor if he just chose to be selfish instead of defend people or whatever. And it's very much just like a light and dark kind of thing. Whereas with Davros, it's more of an ethical conflict instead of just equals of the same caliber and everything. It's always more of a, you know, well, what gives you the right to do this? What makes me the moral high ground here? What is it that, and it always gets down to that. So, you know, here we're, you know, like I said before, we're dealing with the whole, am I a good man? What is good? What's, you know, this is something I think that they're going to drag out through this series, or at least through the first couple episodes until he really finds himself. So, yeah, obviously you want the one that has the ethical ramifications to it, the ethical implications, and make him question everything at this point instead of just, are you still good enough to defeat someone who is like you but evil?
Mm. I think that makes for far more interesting television. I know it's not the kind of the happy family stories or those, you know, save the day and make new friends kinds of episodes that a lot of people really get endeared to. But every once in a while, we need to sort of, you know, tuck the shovel in a little deeper so that we're getting some more substantial development out of our primary characters. And that earns you the right later to have, all right, now you're on more stable ground, now you've got a better sense of self, or now you've got your, you know, your purpose has been reestablished, and you can wing yourself off and have the adventures. But even, you know, in our own lives, there are these instances where you've got to do some housekeeping, and or call that, you know, sort of, you know, soul searching, or whatever name you want to put on it. But every once in a while, you need to put in the work so that you can earn the vacation time. And that's kind of what this is all about. I wouldn't mind if it lasted more than just a couple of episodes, or is something that just keeps kind of running under the surface, so you never quite feel totally comfortable. I like having that uncertainty to the show.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I really feel like this is something that has been missing, in that, you know, the Doctor, it's, yes, he faces tough choices, but you always know that he's the moral strong point. He's, you know, whatever he decides is going to be the, you know, the ethical choice or whatever it is. And even if it's kind of questionable, you still know that he did the right thing. And throwing that into question is a great way to really flesh out the character. And now that we have, you know, not only a new Doctor, but a whole new set of regenerations, you know, that kind of needs to happen at this point. Let us know exactly where we stand and, you know, really give some weight to this, for all intents and purposes, brand new character. Mm-hmm. So, but so where does this leave us exactly with Davros? I mean, we know that, you know, we're kind of looking at the ramifications of what's going to come with him being in the show, but like, for him as a character, like, what do we expect to see out of him now? I mean, we've seen him, you know, from the high point in his career, basically, to, you know, willing to destroy reality. Where does he go from here?
Well, there's a concern I have here. When we sort of last left him off, he was still sort of under the thumb of the Daleks, of the original Dalek set that he had originally created. So he's become part of the machine again. So he's being used as a weapon. We didn't really know where he left off when, you know, by the time, when we got to the end of the, of Journey's End. So you just assume that he's sort of got filed away and they're going to utilize him once again as another sort of, they've released him again. But my concern is that we're now dealing with the hunt for Gallifrey, or maybe we're going to be dealing with the hunt for Gallifrey. And we know that there are Daleks outside the time lock. Mm-hmm. So does this now mean that they are also going to be aware of the fact that the sort of, it's a race to find the planet, you know, the time war resumes in smaller groups, or they're sort of, you know, gathering forces back into the area to resume the war once again, but they just don't know where the battlefield is at the moment. So this, I still see him being used as, pawn is not the right word, because he's definitely not a pawn on the board. Bishop, something.
Like a bishop? Yeah.
Like a bishop, but with no religion. But I see this as, I don't know if they're necessarily going to really do anything new with him. I think they're just going to be using him as a counterpoint, possibly to sort of get into the Doctor's head. But as far as how he's executing it, I think he's just going to be his usual, power grab self and just there to get under the doctor's skin, literally. But no character growth. I'm not expecting we're going to see, I've been thinking about my life.
Right.
We're not going to have these heart to heart moments.
Maybe he'll build some new Daleks, and these ones are really going to work this time.
These ones are bigger at the top and smaller at the bottom.
These ones have two eyes.
Yeah, two plungers. They can't do anything. Just roll around.
I posted the question on Twitter, and I asked our listeners what they felt were what the quintessential Davros stories were and what they wanted to see out of Davros in the future. And we had at Ben110173, apparently Ben was taken, said,
oh, my old good buddy, Ben110173.
He said, well, I guess I will join the rest and say Genesis of the Daleks, but I would also suggest Big Finish as Davros.
Right.
So, yeah. And the Big Finish works. We're huge fans of Big Finish here. I mean, in case you haven't gotten that over the past month or so. And they do a really good job of really digging into the character and really, showing a lot of stuff that you can't get in the show. Two fleshing out his backstory.
Specifically, yeah, the Davros collection that Ben's referring to here is the one that I mentioned earlier with Colin Baker, where they actually get forced to work together for philanthropic research and development for this third party company, and all the while the Doctor is convinced that Davros is just out to start building his weapons and his army again, and Davros is trying to convince everyone that he's turned a new leaf and he's actually working for for positive means, and he's just a research scientist like anyone else, just like the Doctor. Rather interesting there, but we get these flashback moments where you come to find out about how he had originally gotten the idea for the pepper pots and such. The other collection is actually a four story set called I Davros, which is sort of like a take on the I Claudius idea, and looking at the origins of Davros himself, takes him from his childhood. So you get all the twisted aspects of the chapters are named things like innocence and guilt and purity and things like that. So they're really dealing with some weighty material about how to build a mad mastermind. Essentially, here's the Lego set and the instruction book for how to build a nut job, and it's actually really, really well done.
Yeah, and then we also got some feedback from Bobby Honeycutt, who said, I'd like to see Davros involved in a sophisticated plot against the Doctor, maybe finding Gallifrey for Time Lord tech. And that could be an interesting thing is, have Davros as the recurring villain over the series and both of them scrambling, the Doctor trying to, find Gallifrey basically to hide it away again or whatever the case is. And Davros like racing him, trying to get there so that he can get whatever tech he can. Like, that could be really interesting.
It sounds like one of those great shows where you've got, the hero and the villain are racing across the country, and like one will be like see the signs that the other has been in town just a day before them, and they race off to the next one, and they get, oh, I was there just a day before you, and they just slowly working their way across the country with a great soundtrack the whole time.
Of course, you say that, and the first thing I think of is the comedy special that. With Rowan Atkinson as the Doctor, and it's like, oh well, I went back further than you. Oh, anyway, and then the final bit of feedback we got was from at Style99, who said, the only question I have for Davros is, where's my unlimited rice pudding?
Great reference, thank you, sir. Shows people are definitely paying attention if they're going to pull from that episode. but you have to roll your R, unlimited rice pudding.
I don't know. It's exciting to see them going with a villain that's not the norm. I mean, everybody assumed that they were going to be bringing back the Master, which I'd say is almost the safe choice. People know the Master. Everybody liked John Sim in the role. It's a villain that people connected with and really enjoyed. And to go back instead and pick Davros, I feel like is more daring, but has a lot more reward to it too.
Yeah, well, I think don't rule the Master off the table yet. I mean, that's not something that they've necessarily walked away from. But to,
oh, no, no,
to,
no.
yeah, to raise the curtain on Davros just shows that they're going to try to mix it up a little bit. They're not going to go very pattern oriented, and it's going to hopefully, you know, because this is one thing that I think the current production team loves to do is they want to get people interested in tapping back, just as we've been doing, going back and saying, oh, there's more story to this if you go back and look at older material, and it gets people interested in finding out some of the reasons why this is such a big deal. You know, why, well, you know, I'm watching this on the couch and my dad is in the background going, oh, that's a name I haven't heard in, you know, 25 years. Crap. And he'll come and watch it with you.
Yeah.
Are there any other major villains that they haven't touched back on yet?
A few. Well, they could bring Omega back if they wanted.
That's exactly the one I was thinking too. I was like, well, where's Omega?
Let's go big. The Valyard.
Yeah. And they name checked him.
Yeah, they definitely did. And they actually kind of stirred the water up a little bit there because they were trying to make some sort of an implication that the Valyard was the doctor, or that the Valyard was actually the master and things like that, or that there was some sort of a time loop back. But they could definitely pick up on that one again. And there are a few others. Although with a couple, there were ones that were so attached to the actors or actresses that portrayed them. I'm not sure if they could, if it would be in their best interest to recast and try and revive characters. I don't know if you're ever going to see the Ronnie again, things like that.
It's, you know, we get a lot of the, a lot of the lesser known villains get, you know, thrown in for like one-off kind of things just to rehash them, basically like the Zygons. I mean, that I don't expect to see the Zygons again for a while, even though we do have the question, what happened to the negotiation that happened? You know, do we have Zygons living on Earth now? I don't know, but
Torchwood is handling it.
yeah. But you know, a lot of the older villains, that if they do try and bring them forward, that's basically all they're going to be able to get out of them is like, hey, look, here they are. We'll do one episode with them, and then we might bring them back 3 or 4 years down the road. Most of the major villains we have already gotten, or are really aren't, would be very difficult to bring forward, like the Ronnie.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's exciting, though.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting choice. I like the fact that it's got a lot of people curious. I don't think it's particularly divisive. I think a lot of people heard the voice and still hearing it now, they still think, you know, they hear the voice modulation and think it's just a Dalek. And that's fine. You know, if that's what you go with, that's okay. Cause it's sort of related and you'll get it. You know, it's not going to confuse anybody. And you did get a chance to see him in a couple of episodes previously. So it's not going to be a total curveball, but, you know, as is probably their intent, they want people to want to look back a little bit. And it's great that they do, because there's some fun material to go back and enjoy.
Yeah. So we do have a good chunk of news this week, though. Obviously, yeah, today, the big news today just came out. The brand new first official trailer came out today. I mean, 60 seconds of absolute brilliance. And I'm fully expecting to wake up tomorrow and have, like, you know, 5 or 6 pages emailed to me of, you know, second by second, frame by frame breakdowns. Mm-hmm.
Probably currently getting penned.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd be surprised if they're not already out there. But they did put a lot of, you know, like, teases and stuff in there. I mean, we saw some new villains, or new aliens, I should say, but different things. But then again, that whole Am I a Good Man theme coming back, and we hear Davros voiceover and you know, the Doctor throwing out the Into Darkness line that has a lot of people squeeing for various reasons, but...
Well, but there's take apart some of the things. Davros himself is talking to him about the fact that, you know, life persists, or life sort of pursues its ways. You take the analogy of the fact that, you know, you can go ahead and lay concrete across an entire field, but the first point that cracks, you're going to see grass blades starting to poke through it, because life always finds a way to go through. And you can take that as a positive feel and say, yeah, that's great. Life persists. But what if your life is a jerk? So
coming from the mouth of Davros, I don't really think that that's meant to be a good, reassuring feeling.
Okay, so he's not going to be doing any positive speaking tours or anything. Life persists. we get more explosions around the control panel. I know some people are still wondering whether or not we're going to see some sort of control room reset. But then there's scenes where they're sitting there on the steps, and the time rotor's going off in the background, and everything looks okay.
It's not going to happen. The sparks look pretty. That's it. It's the only reason. Yeah.
There might have been a few sparks because of the fact they had to crash. You know, they were, you know, 'cause you see some scenery, he's holding onto the railing sideways. because, you know, obviously neither one of them knew how to fly the thing. That's where we left off. So they're going to have a, you know, kind of a bumpy landing, maybe a few sparks. And they just used that little bit because it makes for great teaser trailers.
Exactly. The sparks look pretty. That's the only reason they're there. We're not getting a new desktop. Not happening. Then there's a, we also got some new casting information. There's going to be a new guest star. I'm going to destroy this
Sanjeev
name.
Sanjeev Bhaskar.
Thank you.
Good job there, Jay.
I try. Yeah, so he's from Notting Hill and Goodness Gracious Me. And, you know, he said that he's very excited to be a part of the show. He's really thrilled to come on as a guest star, so.
And then Moffat comes in and obviously says, oh, we're so pleased to have him on there because it's going to be such a darker season. And all of a sudden it just starts going into his usual company line. So nothing new from Moffat.
Yeah, imagine that.
Well, nothing new from what he says. But there is some new stuff potentially about Moffat.
Yeah, and I mean, this is all just rumor at this point. Nothing has been confirmed, but apparently Moffat is being rumored to be linked to a future Star Wars movie. And this has some weight because he did actually, he was a writer for the 2011 version of The Adventures of Tintin, which was produced by Lucasfilm. So he's in there. He's got, you know, he's worked with them before, so it makes sense that they would pick him again, but I don't know.
Jay, when we were tossing this around, Jay was a little stumped. I saw lots of ellipses and but here's just something to put in the oven as you're baking your noodle here. So we've been talking about, you know, how much longer on the showrunner career calendar does Moffat have? You know, he's talked his way through his plans for what he wants to see through series 9, but if there's this future project that has him working more closely with Lucasfilms or LucasArts, is that an opportunity for him to say, you know what, I'm ready to start working within a new universe, and passes the baton? Just something to think about.
Yeah. No, and I, you know, we like to throw the disclaimer on there that, you know, he hasn't said that he's going to be leaving it at the end of series 9. You know, all he said is, I have it planned out that far. But yeah, it's, we've been questioning this, you know, how far is he going to go? How long is he going to stick with the show? You know, I mean, there was a lot of speculation as to whether he was even going to outlast Smith or if he was going to exit with him. Yeah, so it's obviously the time is going to come where he is going to leave the show. So it makes sense to say, okay, he said that he's planning at least this long. Let's, you know, let's put a bookmark there and say this might be, you know, make your plan accordingly or whatever. So I could definitely see it working out that way. But then I also have the question, if, because there was a lot of upset with Series 7B. Yeah, and there's a lot of people complaining about the way the show has been run. If Series 8 gets the same kind of negative feedback, at least on the, you know, show running part of it, do you think that Moffat might be volunteered to exit? Or do you think that they're just going to let him run his course?
If it starts hurting the numbers enough, then he might be discouraged from continuing.
Yeah, Haley's absolutely right. It's got to be driven by numbers in this case. I mean, he hasn't faltered yet. The fan base might be getting a little polarized, but the numbers throughout have always been consistently strong. So the moment that starts to dip, well, I shouldn't say the moment it starts to dip, but if there's a trend,
yeah. But if he's going to do a Star Wars film, he doesn't probably have time to do Doctor Who at the same time.
And Sherlock, and.
Yeah. Then some other news that we've got, we'll touch on this one before the big one. Apparently a man in England built himself a Dalek and decided to invade schools.
let's phrase this carefully. Man unleashes psychotic pepper pot on school children. News at 11, but first. He had been working on a working model, you know, servo driven. And when he had it ready, he wanted to sort of support his daughter for sort of a show and tell, but did so by bringing it to the hallway of the school and sending it down the hall screaming exterminate. And there was, you know, the press was involved. They knew what was going on. They kind of had a good nature with it. But when you read some of the spins on these articles, if you were to just take it at headline form, you know, they've got pictures of the kids cowering and the ice dog scanning the children and whatnot. I'm like, this is kind of a twisted way to be able to show your daughter, look what my daddy did this weekend, you know?
But see, that's what I'm saying. My version was far more exciting than, oh, yeah, this guy built a thing and decided to show and tell with his daughter. No.
Man unleashes. Yeah. Wow. But yeah, that's a... That's and actually, it's a really, really nicely done model too. He went with one of the red models, and it's actually a really well done piece.
Yeah, but not he went with the RTD version and not the new paradigm. Thankfully, not the Skittle Daleks.
True.
So yeah, I hate the Skittle Daleks. I really do.
But, well, they do too. the Daleks themselves hate them.
But then the big news that came out this week, which launched a whole hashtag trend. Apparently, the scripts for I believe it's the first 5 episodes of Series 8 were somehow leaked. I don't know the whole story behind it. I've tried.
As far as I understood, they were being sent for translation to South America. Yeah. And that's when you start bringing in third parties, that's where the security net starts getting thinner and thinner. So, but I guess it got compounded now by the fact that there's unfinished, or incomplete material to one of the episodes now, video material, pre-CGI, pre-sound cleanup and things like that, that have also gotten compromised. So BBC has made all their statements, and thankfully, a lot of the fan base too has jumped on and said, you know what? No, we're in your corner on this. There's wanting to know, what episode titles are and that kind of thing, or, who's going to be the big bad this week or what have you, but there's a limit to what we want to be spoiled.
And this started the whole, there's a BBC came out and said, look, this is the situation. And they were very upfront about it. They said, the scripts have been leaked. We're asking the fans not to spoil this. That they didn't go as far as to like say, hey, please don't look for them. But they were very much like, don't post them. Don't spoil anyone else. Don't force it on anyone. Basically. And they launched the hashtag, keep me spoiler free. Yep. And, this has been splattered all over the place. And I love seeing the response from the fans. There's things like, you spoil me, I block you. Simple as that. Yeah. And that there's so many people that are following this and, really acting behind it. And I'll be honest, I've been tempted to go out and look, but that's my choice whether or not I go and look for. I don't want to, open up my favorite news article and poof, there they are. It's like, oh crap, that's the whole spirit behind this is if you do decide to go out and look at these and read the scripts or whatever, don't put them on your Facebook. Don't ruin it for anyone else. Don't be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're bringing Sarah Jane back.
I read them. And in the second episode, the doctor literally eats Clara.
Yes.
Well, there's that good man spoiler question alert. Answered. Yeah,
I mean, really, who has the time?
Is it red wine or white wine with a companion?
A nice Chianti.
Now that we're within, 4 weeks, 5 weeks? Math is hard. Thankfully, it's not like, this came out in June. We're not having to keep the, in May or something where we're keeping this under wraps for months and months at a time. The BBC is going to start pumping stuff out. We are going to start getting new information. So it's not going to be as big a temptation. So, again, just the push, don't force it on anyone if you do have it. So.
Yeah. Like don't put spoilers in your article titles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So. She means the actual spoilers, not the word spoilers.
Yes. Put that word there.
But that's all the news that we've got. So, unfortunately next week with summer being the way it is, we are actually going to be skipping next week. There's not going to be any new content coming out next week. So we're going to be taking a break. But when we come back, we're going to take a look at the Paternoster Gang. They're very popular characters and we are going to be seeing them again in Series 8. So we want to really, really take a look at them. We haven't actually, examined them closely yet.
Well, the characters themselves and also just the fact that with their increasing popularity, there have been, attempts to try and drum up public support for a spinoff. There have been obviously a lot of people out there who are endeared to the individual characters themselves. There's big followers for the Jenny and Vostra partnership. Strax has his following as being the little psycho potato and what have you. But is there something more to these characters and the fact that Moffat has been sort of turning them into the part of the Scooby-Doo gang? Or is it just a matter of the fact that he likes to have a variety of supporting characters there so that you've got the appeal to a broader audience? So we'll sort of look at the strategic thoughts behind bringing the Paternoster Gang around over and over again, and what it means for where we are as far as the story and establishing the new Doctor and supporting Clara as well, because they've come to her aid, obviously, on numerous occasions. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, absolutely. So that's what we've got coming up. But this has been episode 95 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, if I had not elevated you beyond crude emotions, I could almost mistake that tone for one of victory.
And this is Gear saying, yes, 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 we shall become all-powerful, crush the lesser races, conquer the galaxy, unimaginable power, unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc., etc.
And this is Haley saying, this is a Canadian free podcast.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centered shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.